You are Locked On Bears, your daily Chicago Bears podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
You are Locked On Bears, and I'm your host, Lauren Cox, from Pro Football Focus and BearsWire.com, part of the USA Today Sports Media Group. We're here, as always, to get you some Chicago Bears talk. It's the off season, and we're getting you through it one podcast at a time. Today, I'd like to try and set a little bit of some reasonable expectations for this Bears team for 2018, both from a large team scale and what success might look like this season for the roster as a whole. But also, later on in the show, I want to get to some individuals of note on both sides of the ball that I think it's important to try and define what this 2018 season could and should look like from an individual production standpoint. Let's start with the big picture, though, because this time of year, we hear all the hype, all the positivity. Everything coming out of OTAs is everything's going great. Matt Nagy is the perfect coach. Mitchell Trubisky is the perfect coordinator. Their receiving core is locked in. Their offensive line is locked in. The defense is back and clicking on all cylinders. You name it. Anything positive that you can hear about the Chicago Bears starts to come out this time of year because no one's going to come out and say anything negative. There isn't drama really in OTAs, especially when it comes to the roster that the Bears have now. And so, you know, that expectation and that hype starts to build from week to week here and day to day here. It's like, well, now Nagy's offense is going to change this and their defense is going to be this. And now how good can this Bears team be? And I think it's reasonable that you've seen, you know, I know Pro Football Focus put the Bears as a dark horse wild card playoff team. I think that's fair to speculate about. But, you know, just how successful do we think this Bears team could be? I mean, it is a first-year head coach, and first year with the team, with that head coach, and also the head coach's first year ever being in that position. He's inheriting a fourth in the NFC North Chicago Bears team that couldn't break 500 under John Fox. It's been picking in the top 10 for far too long, and clearly was a team that wasn't ready to compete last year, you know, even in spite of its head coach. So how big of a turnaround can we really expect here? I think the best way to look at this for me is looking at other recent first-year head coaches to kind of see where expectations might lie. And I think there's a, you know, you can, if you look across the board at all first-year head coaches in the last couple of years, maybe that's not giving you quite an accurate picture, because sometimes you get a coach that comes to a team that doesn't have a quarterback and they kind of, you know, they tank a little bit for the first year and they don't win many games, or maybe they draft a rookie and that rookie isn't ready to win a lot of games. So I was looking here at first-year head coaches coming to teams with at least established quarterbacks, not necessarily great elite, you know, future Hall of Famers, but guys that they know who their starter is all offseason, can prepare with the team and win games with the team, even if they're not going to be a top five quarterback. So you look at last year, Sean McDermott with the Buffalo Bills came in with Tyrod Taylor, and I see this as a situation that the Bears most closely impact, not with the Bills specifically, but just having a quarterback fairly in place. You know, you know what's happening there. The whole team is built around that quarterback. And so I think it's important to compare the Bears to those types of situations. McDermott comes to Buffalo. They seem, it's a weird situation with them. They seem to be like almost trying to tank, trading away their good players. Somehow they stumble into a 9-7 record and make the playoffs as a wild card team. You also had, of course, the team that the Bears always get compared to this offseason, the Los Angeles Rams with Sean McVay. Again, you come into a second-year quarterback with a first-year new NFL head coach, at least with Sean McVay, and they go 11-5, win their division, and advance to the divisional round of the playoffs. You know, that's sort of the bar. I think you see people set that as the target for the Bears to shoot for, is replicate Jared Goff with Mitchell Trubisky and Matt Nagy and Sean McVay and shoot for that 11-5 type big first-year jump. It's definitely a goal. It should be the goal, but I feel like you're setting yourself up for disappointment if you start to expect double-digit wins and really that playoff push just yet from this Bears team. And not that it's not something to shoot for, but you have to be realistic about this Bears situation. But before we get deep into the Bears situation here, I want to look at some 2016 first-year head coaches with these established quarterbacks. I think Adam Gase with the Dolphins and Ryan Tannehill. Year one, they went 10-6 and made the wild card round. They didn't finish first in their division, but made the playoffs with that kind of first-year bump, new offensive system, established quarterback, and got better play out of him. Obviously, they haven't been able to sustain it since then, but still, you see that first-year jump. There was also Mike Mularkey with the Tennessee Titans, rejoining with Marcus Mariota there. They went 9-7 in his first year. Did not make the playoffs, but had that nice sort of above 500 improvement type year. There was also Ben McAdoo's first year with the New York Giants, and Eli Manning, obviously a very established Super Bowl winning quarterback. They went 11-5 and made it to the first round of the playoffs. And then Dirk Koetter with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and Jameis Winston. They, like the Titans, went 9-7 and did not make the playoffs. And so when you look at these first-year head coaches, all of those coaches were above 500. All of them had established quarterbacks, even though the Titans and Buccaneers didn't make the playoffs. These are all teams that clearly showed a lot of success in that first-year bump. And I just question whether or not the Bears situation might just be a little bit tougher. And we don't have the time on this podcast to go through every single team's situation that year, but I look around particularly at the NFC North. The Minnesota Vikings, Super Bowl contenders, one of the favorites in the NFC, certainly a team that got better this offseason after having been one of the best teams in the NFC last season. So they're certainly penciled in at the top of the division until something can change that. Then you've got the Green Bay Packers, Aaron Rodgers coming back from injury. The goal when Rodgers is healthy for them is always Super Bowl contender. Certainly, they're a playoff contender and a double-digit win team when Rodgers stays healthy. And then you've got the Lions, who, you know, they finished 9-7 last year, which was good for third in the division, which was still, you know, it almost felt like a little bit of a disappointment, but they kind of came in together. They fired their head coach. They're looking for that new head coach bump with Matt Patricia running the show over there too. So you look at this NFC North division, and it might be the best division in the NFL right now on paper, just from top to bottom. And I really think it's going to take a lot to finish, you know, in terms of divisional games, finish above 500. To be able to beat one of these other teams twice in the same year, or even to beat the Vikings once, I think is going to be a pretty tough matchup, at least in terms of on paper. And I think for the Bears to then, you know, lose 2, 3, 4 divisional games this year and still finish up in that playoff type level, they'd have to really kill it in the rest of that schedule. And, you know, I don't want to go on paper, you know, wins and losses by games in June. I mean, it's too early to get into anything like that, but you know, just from a numbers standpoint, a total of 3 teams from one division can make the playoffs. And that's assuming no other division has a wild card team. So, you know, the Vikings are, again, barring any kind of surprise, the Vikings are making the playoffs. The Packers, perhaps if they can stay healthy, they should be a playoff team. And Detroit, they're looking for that bump from 9-7 last year, the same new head coach type bump that the Bears are looking to get. I mean, there's a lot of competition right now in this division. You know, I think I can see a scenario where, you know, the Packers underachieve again for whatever reason. If it's Rodgers, if it's their defense, if it's their receivers, you name it, some reason they underachieve a little bit, and maybe the Lions underachieve as they're, you know, they're in a transition right now, and maybe there's too much transition and they take a step back. I mean, you can see the scenarios here, but I do think you're asking a lot, and a lot of things have to go right for this team to be successful and for this team to make the playoffs or to have that type of a season this year. I think it's possible the Bears could go 8-8 and still finish fourth in the NFC North, and that might still be a good season. You know, that's improvement. That's a big step forward from what we've seen over the last, boy, almost 5 years now. I mean, besides the initial Mark Trestman bump, team hasn't won 10 games since Lovie Smith was the head coach. You want to see them get closer to that and at least show some consistency. And I think that's the big thing we should be expecting from 2018. Improvement and stability. You can't, I mean, we shouldn't expect the world from Matt Nagy in year one. I think we really need to focus on seeing growth as a team, but also looking for individual improvements from, you know, the key players here on both sides of the ball, especially offensively, as these guys try and master Matt Nagy's system. Speaking of individual improvement, we got to talk about our friends over here at BlueChew.com. They can help you increase your individual performance and really get some of that extra confidence back when it comes to the bedroom. Blue Chew brings you the first chewable pill product with the same FDA-approved ingredients that you find in Viagra and Cialis, so you know it's got the stuff in there that's going to work. And the nice thing about the chewable form here is that you can take them at any time, day, night, full stomach, and because you chew them to consume them, you don't just swallow the pill, it gets in your system faster and can even work up to twice as fast as the little blue pill. So you're always just a quick chew, a quick blue chew away whenever that opportunity is going to arise. It's prescribed online. It ships straight to your door, discreet package. None of those awkward in-person doctor visits. You're not waiting at the pharmacy and having, you know, making eye contact and kind of taking it and getting out of there. Just none of that awkwardness. It's made in the USA. It's prepared there. Blue Chew ships it directly, and it's cheaper than a pharmacy, especially with our special deal for Locked On Bears listeners. If you go to BlueChew.com, BlueChew.com, you can get your first shipment free if you use our promo code Locked On. All you got to do is pay $5 shipping, and they will send it to you for free. Again, it's BlueChew.com. Promo code Locked On gets you your free sample. Blue Chew is the better, cheaper, faster choice than any of those other products. And we really do thank Blue Chew for sponsoring Locked On Bears. Today on the podcast, we're setting expectations for this 2018 season. And so much is going to fall on the shoulders of Mitchell Trubisky. I think it's important we kind of start there because this team is going to go pretty much as far as he's going to take them. You know, the defense is going to be a big part of it, but this team's overall success always is going to fall on the shoulders of the quarterback. And so I think it's important to kind of get a gauge for what that might look like from Mitchell Trubisky. You know, the benchmark for quarterbacks is always 4,000 yards. And, you know, year two, maybe it's a little bit early for Trubisky to really make that bump into the top-tier quarterback like that. As much as we like the plays he showed last year, I think from a number standpoint, that's just, it's asking a lot for a second-year quarterback. I mean, you compare him to Jared Goff last year. Jared Goff had 3,800 yards. I mean, he didn't even hit that type of a level of benchmark yet. You know, I think I'm more comfortable putting Trubisky on the, you know, 3,300 type pace. You know, maybe 3,500 could be a little bit of a goal to shoot for there. But, you know, I think he's more on this Alex Smith level of production right now. And, you know, Alex Smith, I think, actually did break 4,000 yards last year with Matt Nagy. But, you know, typically over the course of his career, he's kind of in that range. And that's perfectly fine for a second-year quarterback learning a brand-new offense. And, you know, certainly Smith wasn't 4,000-yard guy the first year he got with Andy Reid in Kansas City. So, you know, I think it's a good stepping stone level of production for Trubisky. And I think you could see the same thing with the touchdowns. You know, he's not going to be a 30-touchdown guy this year. You know, I put him down in the, you know, 22 to 25 touchdown range. You know, I think it's market improvement, but he's not going to light the world on fire. I don't think it's fair to expect him to light the world on fire. It's a goal you can set for him, but I think Trubisky would be thrilled with a 3,300 yard season and 22 touchdowns with 8-9 wins. Even if that's third or fourth in the NFC North, that's still a pretty darn good season for year one under Matt Nagy. Because really, I think when you look in terms of this offense, and you look at a couple of new receivers on this team, Allen Robinson and Trey Burton, you know, you kind of piece together the total passing yards here from the total receiving yards that all the receivers have. And I know it's easy to look at the Kansas City Chiefs and see Tyreek Hill broke 1,000 yards, Travis Kelce broke 1,000 yards. So, you know, Allen Robinson, Trey Burton, you know, trying to shoot for that type of top-level production. But, you know, I don't know if that's the case, at least for Trey Burton. You know, I think Allen Robinson, 1,000 yards should be expected. He hit the 1,400 mark in 2015, wasn't able to break 1,000 any other year, injuries, and Blake Bortles have kind of been part of the problem for some of that. So, you know, you think in this offense, if he can get 1,400 in 2015, the expectation, the minimum from a healthy Allen Robinson should be four digits in the receiving yard category. But with Trey Burton, I hope no one's expecting 1,000 yards from him. You know, I don't think anybody is, but, you know, the Travis Kelce bar there is a little bit off the charts here in terms of what we've typically seen from NFL tight ends. I mean, you look at last year, 2017, Kelce and Rob Gronkowski were the only tight ends in the NFL that broke 1,000 yards. And the number three tight end was actually Zach Ertz from the Philadelphia Eagles, Trey Burton's teammate, and he was a little over 800 yards last year. So, you know, I think the ceiling for what we should expect from Trey Burton should be about that 800-yard mark. I mean, this is a tight end playing in the first major role in an offense in his career. I mean, he's really coming into something different and new, not only a new offense, even though similar to what he ran in Philadelphia, but a new role, a new quarterback, and a lot of things to still try to get used to. So I think a more reasonable expectation for me is down in that, you know, 600 to 700 yard range. I think that would be a great first year for Trey Burton in this role, in this offense, with this quarterback, trying to get this kind of figured out as they go here. So then combined, if you can get 1,700 yards from Allen Robinson and Trey Burton, maybe even a little more if Robinson can hit 1,100 yards or Burton can push that 700 mark there, that's a really great start, I think, for this Bears passing attack. If you're looking at those two guys potentially being your two most productive receivers in terms of receiving yards, and then you throw in Taylor Gabriel and Anthony Miller behind them, maybe they combine for another 1,000 yards or so. You know, maybe Gabriel gets 600, Miller 400, or some kind of combination there. Certainly, I think there's a higher ceiling than that for those two, but if we're setting some sort of baseline, more reasonable expectations, I think you could account for about 1,000 each from Gabriel and Miller, and then you throw in a few hundred more from Tariq Cohen, maybe Howard grabs 100 or two, and Adam Shaheen grabs a couple hundred, and then you're starting to get up into this 3,300-yard range for Mitchell Trubisky when it comes to receiving yards from everybody adding up into what the passing yards for the quarterback might be. Whereas you can see where if you're trying to put Trubisky up in that 3,600-3,800 type range, you got to find another 300 to 500 receiving yards coming out here from somebody else. I mean, that would be, you know, Burton breaking 1,000 yards somehow, or Gabriel or Miller individually pushing closer to 1,000 yards. I mean, that's just a lot to ask for from the offense. So I think you can kind of sit comfortably with these expectations of production in these more reasonable ranges that maybe won't result in a team going 12-4, 11-5, and making a big playoff push. But it's all important first steps towards making that playoff push maybe in 2019 when everyone knows the offense, all the receivers have been in place, Trubisky knows everybody, and you maintain that defensive continuity from year to year. That would seem to be the more realistic formula in my mind. The success of the offense, I think, is going to rely on a lot of the success of the defense as well. So coming up next on the podcast, we're going to look at a couple individuals on the defensive side of the ball and try and set some expectations for a few of the key guys I feel like have question marks, or at least some question marks of where the expectations should be in 2018. We talked about it a little bit on our last podcast, but I still feel like pass rush is going to be a question mark for this team. And I think it's interesting to kind of keep stock of where we feel like Leonard Floyd and Aaron Lynch can potentially produce this year. You know, I think this is now year three for Leonard Floyd, and the expectation should be that this guy needs to be a 10-sack player. You know, he put up 7 sacks in 12 games during his rookie year. I mean, it's time now. He needs to stay healthy, play like the 9th overall pick in a draft. You know, I know there's more to measuring the success of an outside linebacker than just sacks, but for me, anything less than probably 8 sacks, you know, 7 or 8 sacks, should be a disappointment for Leonard Floyd. He needs to take that next step. He needs to stay healthy and play like a number one pass rushing threat that can get after the quarterback and fulfill that cliche of terrorizing the opposing offensive coordinator and the quarterback and keeping up at night. You know, you don't need Leonard Floyd to be a 15-sack Pro Bowl type guy. You just need him to be that dominant number one edge rushing pass rusher. You know, especially when you don't have the proven players around him at that position. You know, Aaron Lynch, 6 sacks during his rookie year, 6.5 during his second year. I think after having not produced anything for the last couple of years for off-field and injury reasons and you name it, I think the expectation should be to start to get back to that level. You know, like if he can play all 16 games and be a 16-game starter, I'm looking for 7 sacks. You know, I'm looking for that production, that getting after the quarterback, especially if Floyd is taking the focus, if tight ends are being put on that side and the running back is adding help on that side and the line is calling protections that shift them to Floyd's side. Aaron Lynch, in theory, would then have one-on-one matchups against right tackles, left tackles, wherever they're moving him around, and he needs to produce in that situation. And again, I'm not trying to get too caught up on sacks here because pressures and quarterback hits are very important measures of pass rushing success. But when you get those sacks, you know, statistics show and analytics that we've run at PFF, you can see the impact that sacks have. I think even some guys, you know, like Jumosk on Twitter, Justice Mosqueda, has done some stuff about just how devastating sacks can be to the drive of an offense. And it just makes everyone else on the defense, it just makes their job easier. Particularly, I think, when it comes to the secondary. And that's why I want to wrap up here with Kyle Fuller in particular. Because, you know, the cornerback position, it's less about statistical production, you know, when it comes to a lot of the, at least the mainstream numbers. And for me, it's more about kind of what we see from a results standpoint on the field. And sometimes that's hard to measure, but I do think there's, you know, you just want to see fewer big plays. You know, again, I guess I'm coming back to statistical production here, but, you know, over the first 11 games of 2017, Fuller allowed a catch of 20 or more yards in 7 out of those 11 games. The big plays were there, especially early on in the season where he's just getting beat 1 or 2 times a game and it ends up being a big one. And he, you know, he had the pass breakups and that's great. And you want to see him have the interceptions and make the turnovers, yes. But for me, the expectation should be more game-to-game consistency from Kyle Fuller. You know, at the very least, he needs to maintain the level of play he played in 2017. He can't drop off the way he has in years past. He has to prove that 2017 is not just an anomaly. He's not just a one-year wonder. That should be the minimum of what we expect from Kyle Fuller. Maintain your success, live up to the contract, and then hope that you can see another step of improvement. He's in the same system. He's got, you know, he's no longer potentially, you know, feuding or in the doghouse of the defensive coordinator. Everything's on the same page. He's got the contract. He's been healthy. He's got confidence. He had turnovers. He had pass breakups. Carry that in to 2018 and show that improvement, because I really think that's the theme for this Bears team. Like we talked about it with the team as a whole and then Trubisky and all these guys, improvement. Show improvement in 2018, and any success they have beyond that, for me, I feel like is going to be a bonus. I think the playoffs would be a bonus, but if we saw this team play some really tough fought games and finish 8-8, even 7-9, you know, 9-7 would be a nice thing too, but just show that improvement, show that the foundation is being laid with Matt Nagy and Vic Fangio, that this team is building up for more success in year 2 and 3 of this head coach's regime, rather than trying to put so much expectation into year 1. But we'll be talking more about this, I'm sure, as the offseason moves on here. There's plenty more Bears talk to get to. I mean, I only talked about a handful of players even today. So, I mean, there's so much more we'll be breaking down for you this offseason on Locked On Bears. We might even start looking ahead a little bit here to some of the teams that the Bears are going to face in the regular season. Maybe look a little bit more in-depth at the schedule. Again, I'm not a big fan of picking wins and losses in June before training camp and the preseason and all that, but at least kind of giving us a feel for where some of these other teams on the Bears' schedule kind of stand, how those teams are feeling, and where the Bears might kind of fit in the middle of all that. I really do hope you'll keep it locked on Locked On Bears, and remember to do the one thing we talk about at the end of every episode of the podcast, Bear Down. Bear Down.